I can still remember my first year in the mortgage biz, all of the ups and downs, failures, and accomplishments, and there really isn't anything to prepare you for what is one of the toughest careers to thrive in, yet one of the best opportunities there is to make infinite amounts of money. You see, you're inevitably going to make mistakes and failures along the way, but with that being said, there is a way to make less of them. Let this episode help you dodge some bullets, set you up for success, and learn from our mistakes as Brandon and I, we go over our top six mistakes we made in our first year as mortgage pros. If you're new to the show, my name's Tom Moffitt, and I'm joined by my good buddy, business partner, and co-host, Brandon Love. Whether you're new to the industry or a seasoned vet, you will get specific takeaways from every episode as we're both active in the mortgage biz, testing new strategies to then share to our audience, you. Let the Commission Breath podcast be your tool to grow in your mortgage biz. Now, with that being said, let's get right into it.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Commission Breath. Brandon Love here with my good buddy, Tom Moffitt. And today we are going to jump in the DeLorean and head back in time to reflect on six mistakes we made early in our mortgage career. So Tom, why don't you kick things off for us?
Yeah, this was a bit of a tough one because we actually had more than six. So we really had to narrow this down. But these are really the six that really applied to both of us and that spoke the most to us. Yeah, so the first one really is putting too much weight into the underwriting in the early days. This one was more so you, Brandon. So why don't you elaborate on this one and how this really applied to you?
Yeah, I think this came more from a confidence perspective where I didn't necessarily know everything I do today, obviously, but I didn't feel I knew enough to handle certain file types. And I was doing a ton of research on policies, scrolling through Lender Spotlight like crazy, trying to email questions to lenders and things like that, where, you know, at the end of the day, you have to just go out and find the lead. And then once you have the lead actually working through the file, that hands-on experience is so much better. It's like reading a book on gardening and never planting something. You don't have the actual insights of doing the task. And that experience gives so much clarity and makes the learning that much stickier.
Yeah. And I definitely did some of this too back when I started. Like, you think because you're not confident, you need to just sit down and spend hours learning the stuff. But like you said, you don't really learn it until you're actually in the files, and you're not in the files unless you have leads coming in. So you need the leads to come in and you need to learn on the go. And it is kind of a strange thing to say that, because it's like you're dealing with people's biggest finances and biggest investment in their life, buying a home, and you're learning how to do your job on the go. But that's why you should have a mentor to help you through the process. And I could say from my experience, I just felt way more confident. It just felt like one day it clicked. And it was really after just working in the files and really understanding how things worked. And all I can say is, if you are brand new and you're just starting out and you're like, I have no confidence at all, it will come over time.
Yeah. And one thing that helped a lot for this within our brokerage, we had a bunch of underwriting training and we had an underwriting room, and that was helpful. But there was also a separate group of us that had an hour every morning where we just shared the screen on files and we reviewed files together. And there was one person in that room who was an experienced underwriter. And we just walked through and they pointed out flaws and how we had prepared things. Other people picked out questions and stuff like that. And we all learned through osmosis of all those files. And it was super helpful and it led to a lot of growth. And I can see that years later, that small core group of people is doing quite well. And I think a lot of that has come from us kind of engaging in files and learning together.
Yeah, you're very fortunate you came into that. I never had that experience. I did have a good group of people when I first started that we kind of fed off each other. So I am grateful in that way, but you really had that cool group. And I think it really does go back to the basics when you're first starting out and picking your brokerage. Like, everyone says this, but it's true. Like, you need to pick a brokerage that has that sort of setup and not just a better split.
100%. And ironically, that group was a hodgepodge of people from different brokerages, people who had left BRX, people who had never joined, and it just kind of formed organically from one person spearheading it, just kind of saying, hey, you might be a good fit here, or someone else being, hey, can I bring a buddy to this meeting? This is really cool. And it kind of just grew over time. And it was something really awesome and something I'd recommend, kind of like a mastermind's probably the best word for it, but like, it was spearheaded by someone who knew more than all of us. So expert-led mastermind.
Yeah, so the next one really speaks to me, and I think you as well, Brandon, is not prospecting consistently, which results in the roller coaster of productivity. So if you take your foot off the gas from prospecting and you don't keep it consistent, you're going to have that roller coaster of leads coming in. You get busy and then you get swamped in the files. And then next thing you know, the next 3 months, you're kind of tapped and you're dry for the pipeline. And that was me. 100% hands down. And I think some of it was because I was working a full-time job as well. So it was tough to manage like prospecting, underwriting, fulfillment, my second job. And I think a lot of first-time mortgage brokers and agents feel the same as well. But there is a way to try to systemize and really just try to stay consistent with your leads. But yeah, for sure, that really applied to me. How about you, Brandon?
Yeah, same here. I think that in the beginning, number one, I didn't know how much prospecting was actually required, and it was way more than I thought it was. So it was just figuring out what that level was, and then also staying consistent on that level. So as you said, you get bogged down in a file or you're solving a difficult question and it takes half your day. Well, you have to still put in that time to make a couple calls, send a couple DMs, whatever it is that is your marketing strategy. You have to invest the time in there. And to be honest, this is something I still struggle with sometimes. Like, we get bogged down in tasks in our business, working on our business and other projects. And then I'm like, holy crap, I have kind of missed my prospecting time, and I catch up on it though. You just have to do it. And when you're early on, you're like, oh, okay, I'll just do 2 hours of calls tomorrow. But it doesn't work that way. You have to stay consistent on it, or you A, lose the muscle mass, or B, you just keep pushing it off, and then eventually procrastination becomes your killer.
Yeah. And I think the thing that you learn most is learning to rebound quicker, which we both, that clicked for us, realizing, hey, we're not going to be perfect. These are going to be times where we are in the files and we're not prospecting as much. But now for both of us, it's like, we realize that quicker now, which is awesome. Like this week, we just changed our podcast recording times. We were doing it in the early afternoons, which you can argue is like ideal prospecting time. And that's what we felt. We're like, hey, you know what? We've been busy in the files. We haven't been prospecting as much as we should be. So why don't we change that and remove something that is taking up our time? And that was podcasting, recording. So now, what is it, 6:30 in the morning? We decided to do that in the morning with both podcasts, Commission Breath and Canadian Mortgage Guide. And now that's freed up an hour each. So 2 hours of prospecting, what, twice a week? So 4 hours a week, where now that's just strictly towards prospecting. So these are little things and tweaks that you can make along the way to really optimize on your lead gen activities.
And just to add another point on adjusting the schedule there, like switching to 6:30 on these few days a week. Well, I had an extra day this week because I messed up our schedule. But on those days, I've had so much productivity because, you know, we finished this however long it takes. There's still an hour probably before my family wakes up that I just work on files. And then I'm catching up on all these other tasks. So my prospecting day is so much bigger because there's no little admin email here or there. There's no checking in on a file. I've already done it all when I couldn't call people. So it's been a huge boost in my lead inflow this week.
Yeah, and I've caught myself with fulfillment and really doing that during the day. And there's some points where you need to do that. Like, it is time sensitive, but for the most part, if you have the commitment and you're just waiting to close, like the fulfillment stuff can wait. So I found myself, before we had a fulfillment specialist, I was doing it during the day. It's like, hey, why don't I just push this till night? Maybe when my son goes down and after dinner, if my wife allows it, then I can come down to the office and just bang out an hour and just get the stuff done. And that'll free up some time for prospecting. So I imagine you as a listener, there's probably a lot of you listening that probably do some of the stuff during the day. Just think about how urgent it is and if it needs to be done and if you can push it off to a later time.
Exactly. And part of figuring out if this can be pushed off is really knowing who you're working with. And that's another mistake we made, was thinking we needed to have access to dozens of lenders and all these options for people. When the reality is, you know, you work with kind of probably five lenders tops. I know I have like my top two. I've got my monoline lender. I have my lender for big bank and extended ratios. And then I have a couple B options and a MIC. And really most scenarios fit in those buckets. I know the underwriters there very well now. We have that relationship where they're picking up the file, they're giving me a quick call, we're hashing it out quite quickly, and then I can just pass it on to our fulfillment person and get it wrapped up. And it's so much better than trying to work with dozens of people and not knowing the nuance of who uses like a lead underwriter and their own internal kind of fulfillment person and has that kind of tedious policy. Who is going to call for more docs a couple days before funding? You don't have these surprises pop up when you really get to know your lender partner as well.
Yeah, and I think it's a happy medium too, because you do have to sort of try out different lenders when you first start to get a feel and see who works best for you. But with that being said, I would try to narrow down as soon as you can. And for me, it wasn't more so I was trying to work with a bunch of different lenders. It was more so I just didn't know to really narrow it down to that 2 to 5 lenders. Nobody told me. So I was just kind of like, oh, maybe I'll send a file to this lender today just because. So I would really try to narrow that down right away. Like Brandon said, establish that relationship with the underwriters, get to know their policies better. Because at the end of the day, you do have a bunch of lenders you can choose from. The old saying, we have 50 plus lenders, which is true. You have them at your disposal if you need them. And hopefully your brokerage is signed up with the majority of them. But the majority of your files can be placed with a small handful of lenders.
For sure. And it helps with rapport building. It helps with building out those kind of bonuses and incentives so that if you have a lender where it's, let's say it's 5 basis points higher than another lender you haven't worked with, you might have something like their internal lender points. You can match it. So you're still doing your customer service of getting them the best possible option, but you're also working with the best possible partner for your business.
Yeah. All right, this one's a hot topic and applies to a lot of people in the industry, adding complexity and too many bells and whistles to your CRM. So one of the biggest hurdles for mortgage brokers and regrets is not setting up a CRM in the early days. I agree with that point, but I also disagree with it in some ways. I think you can spend too much time on CRMs, and we've talked about this in other episodes, but I think there is that happy medium, like I chatted about with the other point, is you need to have a CRM set up so you can capture the data, but also you don't want to spend too much time trying to build out this automation. And that was my issue with this. I was trying to build out automation with several different CRMs, and I can't imagine, I haven't counted it, nor do I want to, but I've spent a lot of money on it and a lot of time, which if you add up the amount of time that I wasted doing it, it's a cost that could have been allocated towards lead gen, and I can't imagine how much money I lost out on. So that was my biggest thing, is I was spending way too much time on it. What was your experience, Brandon?
Yeah, so I kind of went the other way early on, and I just stuck to a spreadsheet for the longest time. I didn't add a CRM probably until starting my 3rd year. And that's because I realized people were spending so much time and it came at like a sacrifice of other things. And I saw so many people frustrated with the tech, and I'm not super techie. So I was like, okay, let's not get bogged down in this game. For example, someone was like, I spent the whole day trying to figure out my CRM. And I was like, I spent the whole day doing like 4 realtor meetings. That's going to be the better result for me. And my spreadsheet was pretty good. It wasn't perfect by any stretch, but I just kept it dialed in on the people I was talking to and made sure I followed up with all of them. In the beginning, you don't have hundreds of leads, so it's not rocket science to keep track of them. Where you really need a CRM and where I find value now, as the years pass, seeing that kind of renewal date and having some sort of flag on that, which, you know, you can do with a spreadsheet too. At the end of the day, I would probably go back to a really dialed in spreadsheet, and kind of am at this point. And I'm more so relying on our CRM just to tell us about renewal.
I think when people hear the word spreadsheet, they think it's like super basic, and it is, but you could also do some pretty wicked stuff with spreadsheets. You can go in a rabbit hole of automating a damn spreadsheet, but just capture the data. Like Brandon said, the renewal dates to me are most important as well. And you can just track that with a spreadsheet, or you can just use a very basic CRM to do that. But like all of the automation stuff, it's cool. It's sexy. It sounds great on paper, but if something breaks, you have to go back into it. You have to fix it. You have to spend time doing it. You might be hiring outsourced help to help you with this automation, which is what I tried to do with Jungo specifically. And hey, it's a great CRM, but you got to spend money to make it work. Yeah. And to this day, I'm still using a spreadsheet and I love it.
For sure. So before you pour a bunch of cash into the CRMs and different systems, think about where your time and your money is being allocated. And it's probably going to be better spent elsewhere. Number 5, for me, this was a big one and one I realized probably a little too late, and that is spending too much time in brokerage training. So we came from a brokerage where there's a ton of training, like a ton. And there's like mindset training, sales training, underwriting training, like all these different things. Lender meetings, they're great and they have a place. There's a lot I got from them. But eventually I realized that, okay, some of the coaches, I don't necessarily resonate for my business. And I found that sales training was great. We had Steve Diamond for the longest time and he was amazing. I never skipped that one. Beauty. Some of the other stuff I could do without. And it was just kind of like adding an hour of my day and eating a chunk out of what was prospecting and business time. And I felt at the end of it, did I get enough from that hour to justify what I value my time as hourly for my business? And the longer I stayed in my business, the more I realized that I wasn't getting enough from these. So I cut those out because I just felt it was a lot of fluff and made me feel like I was doing a lot of work. But actually, I was just sitting there and engaging with a Zoom call, for lack of a better term.
I've been guilty of this as well, but more so on the paid training side. Like, I've paid a lot of money through the years of just paying for training. And Brandon, you've joked at this in the past that I'm so quick to just buy stuff. And I've been pretty good this year, actually. I haven't bought any training. With that being said, I think like my philosophy on it is a lot of this training is recorded. And I understand like a lot of people need the accountability. They need to be with the group of people to ask questions and just be part of it. But for me, like I can be a lone wolf and really learn this stuff on my own. So my philosophy was like, hey, this training is recorded. I can just watch this on my own time. Maybe on the weekend as I'm working out, I'll listen to it, or at night, whatever I'm doing, any tasks around the house. That's how I consumed my training, which allowed me to do my thing during the day to really bring in the leads.
Yeah, that's a great idea if you have the discipline. So many people don't have the discipline and they feel like this is a great day of work. You know, I worked for 8 hours. Well, okay, did you work for 8 hours or was 3 hours of that brokerage training and other time you were learning like YouTube videos on different topics? Because it doesn't count. Like, you actually have to be working in the business to see the results. It's like watching videos of people working out and then feeling like your arms are going to grow.
Yeah, which segues into our last point, spending too much time on things that just don't move the needle in your business. So a classic example of this is people spending time on their website or their business card. My God, that is such a waste of time. I don't even think I have a website right now. Do we, Brandon? I don't even know.
We don't for our like joint business, which is funny. And actually, a few people have pointed that out. So we are probably at the phase that we should have a website. But
yeah, but at the end of the day, it's a high input, low output. So I don't know. To me, I'm going to keep pushing that off unless you want to spearhead that, buddy.
No, I'm all good. I found too, like, these are tasks that make you feel really good. Like the business card one, you get your business cards printed and you're like, I'm a mortgage agent, and you feel good about it. But then like, I put on one of my old jackets yesterday and I was like, hey, here's all my business cards that I never gave out because I work from home.
Dude, I did the same. We just moved into our new house. I just found my old business cards. It's like, wow, these are like horrible, first of all. And like, why did I spend time doing that?
Time and money.
Yeah.
Another thing here is just kind of chasing what's working for someone else and thinking that it's a good fit for you. So I saw people doing like a bunch of these like webinars and stuff. And I was like, oh, I should do a webinar. And I built out these webinars. It took me a ton of time. Cause like I said before, I'm not super techie. And, you know, I maybe did one of them once and I never used that tool that I spent hours and hours on writing and then recording and all that stuff. So I think figure out what your angle is, figure out what you're going to really dive in on as early as possible. I get it's hard to know in the beginning what's going to work, but the faster you can come to a realization that saying, hey, for example, calls work for me. I'm just going to rely on calls. I don't need to add all these shiny objects. The faster you're going to leap ahead and save more of your time and earn more money per hour.
Yeah. And I think there's something to be said too, that you need to spend time doing that thing too. And it's kind of like a fine juggling act of realizing when to pivot and when to keep going, because I can recall several times in my early days of trying different lead gen activities. And I know if I just kept doing that one thing, that I probably could have broken the seal and started getting success with it. And webinars was a good example for me. Like, I did it for a bit, I would probably say 6-7 months, and I maybe did like 3 or 4 webinars. And it was going all right. I had people show up and I think I closed maybe two or three deals from them. But I know if I kept going with it, then I probably could have been pretty successful with it. But I stopped doing it just because, well, for one, I wasn't passionate showing people how to buy their first rental property given the landscape now in Ontario. I just find it like you can't cash flow. The landlord-tenant board is absolute shit. So I never felt passionate about it. But besides that, if I stuck to that, maybe just pivoted to a different webinar topic, I already had the infrastructure built out. I already knew how to present. So I could have just stayed with that and gone down that lane. But that's kind of like a seventh point there, but I'll leave it at that.
That's the bonus point. I like that. So the bonus point is also recognize and stick to certain things too. Don't give up too early in the game. And that's a good point. Don't give up too early. To wrap this all up, like all of these things we have insight on because we've stuck it out. We've tried, we slogged through the months of zero files funded, a lot of those at the beginning for me, and eventually caught stride. So you will catch stride if you're persistent. At the end of the day, this is an industry that rewards you for just staying in the ring for longer than your competitor. And all of these points come from point of reflection. When you're in the middle of it, you don't get mired too much in the mud. You have to slog it out and find your path, but there's big rewards at the end of all of it.
Awesome. All right. Well, we'll summarize this one and we'll see you next week on the next episode.
Cheers.